were saying. Peter said,
"Something about a thief?"
Daniel took off his coat and hung it on the chair next to Kay's. He took out the forms for Carlo College and passed them to Peter.
"Good,"
Peter said. Kay's smile was so big, her whole face crinkled. Daniel smiled back. He was still full from last night's dinner at Vivian's, but ate marinated olives and arugula salad and linguine and lamb with eggplant. Ordered a glass of red wine. Another. As the servers cleared away the plates, he saw Angel leave the room by herself. Maybe if he apologized to her in person, she wouldn't tell Peter and Kay who the thief was. He excused himself, taking another glass of champagne as he crossed the room. Angel stood in the front entrance with a short-haired woman in a white jacket, one of the restaurant staff, and he heard them talking about candles and cake. "Angel," he said. She stopped in the middle of her sentence, astonishment flickering on her face.
"Is there a problem?"
the woman said.
"No," Daniel said. "As I was saying," Angel said, "we'll dim the lights, then sing. He'll like that."
He waited for her to finish talking. And when she turned to leave with the woman, Daniel blocked her.
"Okay," she said. "What do you want?"
"Did you get my text?"
She crossed her arms over her chest.
"What text?"
"I'm sorry about everything."
"I'm sure you are.
Can you do me a favor? Please don't tell my parents about the money. Or your parents."
She snorted.
"Why not? You're scared?"
"I don't want them to know. I'm working on fixing things. You've got to believe me."
"You want them to think you're perfect? Then you shouldn't have screwed up so hard in the first place."
"They already know I'm a fuck-up. I'm just trying to make things better."
"You know you can't please everyone, right? Me included."
"I swear I'm going to pay you back."
"You need to figure your shit out. But don't expect me to do it for you."
She turned and left the room. Elaine intercepted him as he made his way to the table. Said they'd have to set a date for dinner. She would get his number later. At the apartment. His parents were staying overnight. And they'd have coffee there after the party.
"You'll have more time to talk with Angel once we're all back at our place. Did you get to meet Charles, at least?"
"He seems nice."
"He's planning on law school."
Elaine leaned closer.
"You know, I'm sure they wouldn't want me to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway, because you know me and my big mouth. Your parents are heartbroken that you're not going back to school. I know it seems like we're a bunch of old fuddy-duddies, wanting to control your life. But believe it or not, I was young once, too. I know how it goes. But in this case, I must say, your parents know what they're talking about.
But have you thought of suggesting to them a school in the city if you don't want to be upstate? I mean,
I love your parents. But I get why a kid your age would prefer to be here rather than Ridgeboro. You could always stay with Jim and me. Think about it, will you?"
He heard Angel's voice across the room. Heard her laugh. He'd have to text her again. Keep trying until she gave their friendship another chance. She said he needed to figure his shit out. But wasn't that a sign of caring?
"I'm going to Carlo,"
he told Elaine.
"For summer semester."
Saying it made his shoulders slump. But too late. He'd given Peter the essay. Elaine clapped.
"Terrific!"
He told Kay and Peter he was sorry he couldn't join them at the Hennings, but he had to work early tomorrow. Even though his next shift actually wasn't until Monday.
"We'll see you soon," Peter said. "Summer session is in 2 months, so plan on being home a few weeks before that. to get settled in and squared away. The first week of May would be best.
Kay said, I'm glad you've decided to do the right thing. He had to do as much as he could in the city for the next 2 months, before he left, starting with tonight. He'd meet up with Roland and his friends. He deserved a night out. He was almost at the corner when he saw Charles smoking a cigarette in front of a fire hydrant. Angel had always hated smoking. Called it gross. She must have changed her mind.
Hey.
Charles said.
Hey, man. I want to talk to you for a second.
Daniel stopped.
All right.
Charles tossed his cigarette to the sidewalk, ground it out with his shoe, and took a pack of gum out of his pocket, popping a piece into his mouth.
Can I have a piece?
Charles tossed him the pack.
Keep it. Seriously.
Thanks. The gum was a green square, slightly bitter with artificial sweetener. Daniel immediately wanted to spit it out, but swallowed it instead.
I know what you did,
Charles said.
I've done lots of things. You see my show the other night? I respect Angel's decision not to take this to the courts to try to get her money back. Although I don't agree with her. But you better not try to talk to her again.
Wait, hold on.
Are you seriously going to deny this? I know you stole $10,000 from her. She's the kindest person I know, and you took advantage of her.
I didn't steal.
So tell that to Angel's parents. They go on and on about what a good friend you are. How you guys grew up together like brother and sister. It's disgusting. You should tell them. Or I will.
Daniel took off, half walking and half running, toward the subway. He couldn't please anyone. But he wanted, more than anything, to not feel this terrible about himself. When he emerged from the station at Canal Street, his phone rang. He scrambled for it, hoping it would be her. It was Peter.
Your mother and I looked at the forms. What is wrong with you? You know we can't submit that essay. I don't even want to go to Carlo, so I don't know why I'm writing this. What is this garbage? We gave you another chance, which you clearly do not deserve. And this is how you repay us?
Daniel reached into his coat pocket and pulled out a piece of paper. Under a street lamp, he unrolled it. The small classes and liberal arts education that Carlo College offers, in particular its top-rate economics and political science programs, would allow me to pursue my professional career goals. He felt disappointment, edged with relief.
Sorry, Dad. It was a joke. Let me run over and I'll give the real essay to you now. Not to mention, you were rude to Angel tonight at the party. Now, I know you feel like she betrayed your friendship because she told us about your gambling, but you could at least try to be civil to her. She was worried for you, Daniel. That's why she told us. To help you. Where are you now? At the restaurant? At Jim and Elaine's? I'll come give you the essay. I have it. It's good. Don't bother. You have made your decision loud and clear.
Dad!
This is the last straw. You have done enough.
Can I talk to Mom? He said.
But Peter had already hung up. He ducked into a bar on Grand Street and ordered a whiskey. The bar was small and dark. Nondescript. A jukebox playing AC/DC's Hell's Bells, and a video slot machine glowing insistently at him from a corner. He turned his back to it and looked through his phone,
went through a few messages and deleted them. Saw a note he'd saved months ago, when he was still at Potsdam, with the name and address of an underground poker club in the city. 200 to buy in, Kyle had said. The address was on Lafayette, a few blocks away. He deleted the note and finished his drink. He would go to Jim and Elaine's to give his parents the right essay, though he didn't know their address. He walked east, kept taking the green lights, staying on Grand, then saw a bank and went inside to get cash. His finger hovered over the button that said $50, but he hit $500, the bulk of his account, and watched the bills shoot out. On the corner of Grand and Lafayette, the address for the poker club reverberated in his mind. He headed south to where Howard Street crossed over to Hester. It wasn't too late. He could turn and go right to Roland's, go right past the building, which was narrow. No doorman, only an intercom. He checked his phone. No messages. He was frightened by how much he was about to fuck up, by his lack of desire to stop himself, the rising anticipation at the prospect of falling down, failing harder, and going straight to tilt. He'd known from the moment he left the bar exactly where he would end up. He pressed the intercom button.
"What?"
a guy's voice said. He provided the password. And for a moment, a feeble hope hung in the air that it would be the wrong one. But the door buzzed open. The club was a one-bedroom apartment with two tables piled with poker chips. There was a large TV with a basketball game playing on mute, a counter with buckets of beer. Daniel gave his $500 to a woman in a black suit and waited for a seat. The other players were all men, of different races and ages, and he was one of the best dressed. He approached the table, ready to play. It was the deadest time of morning, before sunrise, when the street sweepers and garbage trucks had yet to emerge, and Daniel sat on a bench along the East River, wind blowing in an unsynced delay, hitting his face seconds after it rippled over his coat. At the beginning of the night, so many hours ago, when he left the restaurant, he'd had a hat, but lost it along the way. He'd lost the Carlo College essay as well, the one he had meant to deliver to Kay and Peter, though it was saved on his computer. He could email it to them if he wanted. He wanted breakfast, coffee, but was out of money. The men had been tougher than they looked. He'd known early on that he was in over his head, but kept playing despite their suppressed excitement. They thought he would lose so much he would break down, and they were waiting for the big show, his inevitable unraveling. But each loss felt like shucking off another weight and removing an uncomfortable article of clothing, so that by the end of the night he wasn't crying but grinning. When he left, he heard one guy say to the other, "Wacko!" He felt a savage euphoria. The night had confirmed his failures, and he'd freed himself from having to fight his inability to live up to Peter and Kay's hopes. He didn't want to go to Carlo. Wasn't ever going to be the kind of guy Angel respected. Some law school applying moral citizen. God, it was great to be himself again. From his bench he could see winking lights on the water and make out flashes of ships as they moved toward the ocean. He heard the distant bellows of boats, purple, low and soothing, nautical mating calls. This was where he used to come with his mother, walking from the Rutger Street apartment. And once she had told him that when she was a little girl, she had loved going to the river in Minjiang.
We would watch how the waves went off into nothing, and that was the place I wanted to go, she said. Far, far away.
He never asked her who we was.
The sky pinkened at its edges, white clouds marbleizing into pastels, and the night broke into patches.
Daniel's toes curled inside his boots.
Well, she'd done it. She'd gone far away from him. The sun tore the night into orange and yellow streaks. The river became blue and glassy. A wave of anger broke over him, and he wanted to talk to her, tell her how angry he was. He dialed the number. The phone rang. But by the fifth ring, he knew she wasn't going to answer, and he relaxed. The woman on the recorded voicemail message didn't identify herself by name, but he recognized his mother immediately. Her voice was reedy and trumpety, yet her tones were clipped and plucked. A flawless-sounding Mandarin he didn't remember her having before. He left a message with his name and number. If she didn't call him, it would be all the evidence he needed.
9. Daniel knew before they finished the first song that they would kill it. That he had arrived at the sweet spot when he was no longer conscious of being on stage. They had practiced plenty, and he hadn't drunk tonight. But the secret was more than that. It was believing in it, even if the songs were crappy and overwrought. At the end of the set, he awoke to find himself on stage with Roland, covered in sweat, the room vibrating around him in sheets of violet and lavender, a roar of cheering and clapping. When they returned to the floor, Daniel felt hands thump his back and shoulders. He heard voices he didn't recognize.
Damn, you can play!
He followed Roland's head through the crowd, stopping every few feet to be complimented by someone else. Roland caught his eye and grinned. Daniel was a prize fighter, surrounded by his entourage after landing a KO. He'd scored a comeback. He'd fucking showed them. At the bar, waiting for Javier and his band to go on, Daniel recognized Hutch, the Jupiter booker, in a beige canvas coat and faded dad jeans. Someone else intercepted Roland, and Hutch said to Daniel,
"Didn't think you had it in you after the last time."
"I'm full of surprises."
"I like what you guys did with the sound. Maybe the vocals and drums can be amped up even more. Push that distortion. Up the reverb, you know."
"We'll see. Thanks."
Roland's friend Yasmin, of the theremin and melodica and strange yowly songs, who always called him Darren or David, or one time, puzzlingly, Thomas, punched him in the arm and said, "Daniel, great job."
"First time you got it right," he said,
smiling. People wanted to know what other bands he played in, how long he'd known Roland. One guy, whose pupils were so black and enlarged his eyes resembled marbles, told Daniel that Psychic Hearts sounded like pork chops.
"Hold on, my friend's here and I want to say hi," Daniel said. "I'll be back."
It felt good, being the one making the excuse to get away. Within a week, everything changed. He and Roland lined up several more shows, and Hutch said he'd come to the one on May 15, at a space out in Gowanus, and that if things went well, he would keep them in mind for any openings later this year. Summer was coming, the city delirious with warmth, the air damp and metallic. And Daniel's phone chirped incessantly with messages. What was going on that night? What had gone on last night? And even if the music he was playing was not the music he wanted to play, even if it meant he no longer had time to work on his own songs, at least he was playing something. Going to shows and parties, charging drinks and car services to his credit card.
wincing each time he swiped, but telling himself he'd worry about it later. That right now, it was worth it to live a little. Because he had done it. He'd reached peak coolness. At a secret show in a Bushwick basement, watching a band who sang lyrics about animals written in this complicated sonnet-like poetry style. Or drinking on a Sunday afternoon with Roland and Javi and Nate while listening to a Lithuanian metal act. He would look around and think that this was no second-tier upstate wannabe party. This was the real deal. And it was only a matter of time before the life he had been waiting for would finally happen. In the future, this would strike him as delusional. But lately, he was so rarely by himself he had no time to dwell on how he'd been ghosted by his own mother. Or Peter and Kay, who also hadn't called. Though he hadn't contacted them either. Or Angel. A writer from a music blog interviewed Psychic Hearts, emailing Roland a Q&A that he filled out and forwarded to Daniel. Q. Roland, you're a veteran in the scene, having played in a number of different bands. What's it like working with Daniel? Do you both collaborate on songwriting and production? Roland Fuentes, RF.
Well, Daniel and I have been friends since sixth grade, so we've done some embarrassing projects together. I'll leave it to him to decide if he wants to talk more about our power punk days. LOL. Straight edge forever! But the advantage of working with someone you've got such a deep history with is that our connection on stage is practically second nature. It's like working with family. While I'm doing the songwriting and producing for Psychic Hearts, the songs also have DW written all over them. He does these insane key changes and melodies that are out of this world. And he doesn't even have to think about them. He sees them.
Daniel Wilkinson, DW.
Roland's a true visionary and a born frontman. Anyone who's seen him on stage can vouch for that.
Hugh. The band's latest songs are more amped, more energetic than the earlier material. Has this shift in style been a deliberate one? RF.
It's been an organic decision to move in this newer direction. It's what feels right for the project. And it really plays to both our strengths.
Javier, who had an apartment full of cameras and video equipment, took a picture of them on his rooftop at dusk. And when the photo appeared alongside the interview, Daniel was taken aback to see that Roland was in clear focus, while he was in the shadows. Or was he being paranoid? At Tres Locos, he passed his phone to Evan to show him the interview, who agreed he did look out of focus.
They're fucking you over,
Evan said.
And you should watch out.
That night, Daniel pulled the link up on his laptop and looked at the picture more closely. A dull, queasy feeling spread through him. He had often felt like this that first year in Ridgeboro. And with Carla Moody, whom he'd been with for a few months his freshman year at Carlo, when he would wake up in the middle of the night with her sleeping next to him and think, "You're only with her because you don't want to be alone." Most recently, he had felt it last September, in the dorm room of a girl he'd been crushing on for weeks. This was when he was still going to classes. Mouths moving together, skin buzzing from the weed they'd just smoked. He saw her eyes move a little to the left, a quick glance at the wall, and detected what he thought was her waning interest. He got up and left. When Roland came home, he said, "You see the interview?" Daniel looked at his friend's hopeful smile and closed his laptop. He didn't want to be like Evan, yelling about being fucked over. Psychic Hearts was blowing up. He and Roland were on their way to something big.
"It's great. Great picture, too."
Daniel sat with Thad and Roland on a rectangle of stained orange carpet, listening to the tracks they had recorded to tape. Thad ran a recording studio in the basement of a three-story house in Ridgewood, where he lived with 10 other roommates.
Daniel read the liner notes Roland had written for the cassette and saw the sentence. All songs written by Roland Fuentes.
Listen.
Thad rewound.
I like that.
Roland nodded.
That glitchy sound.
The wall, a patchwork of plywood sheets, was lined with posters for performances by sound artists and video jockeys, bicycle repair workshops, an anti-gentrification rally in a nearby park. Tall shelves were crammed with mics and amps, drums of all sizes, cratefuls of scavenged instruments, a dented trumpet, a silver harmonica, a plastic flute. A piano sat next to a Tascam 4-track, and an Apple monitor with a screensaver of salamanders morphing into monkeys. While they recorded, a drummer visiting from Berlin napped on a couch by the piano, waking up periodically to smoke.
It's good,
he said, when Daniel suggested that a recording studio might not be the best place to sleep.
I've got the jet lag.
Daniel put the liner notes down. A tangle of cables lay next to cardboard boxes full of cassettes by other Melancholia Records bands. Later, when the only evidence of him having been in here was the Psychic Hearts demo, the cassettes would be filed away into one of these boxes. All songs written by Roland Fuentes.
I'd like to bring in a fuller, more layered sound,
Roland was saying.
Maybe even a drummer. Another guitarist.
Thad said,
I can totally see that. Heavier. More guitar harmonies.
Roland turned to Daniel.
What do you think?
Daniel picked at a callus on his index finger. He stared at the posters and imagined his mother watching an experimental noise artist manipulating sounds on a laptop. What the fuck expression on her face? Why was he even thinking about her?
Cool.
He was having trouble mustering up enthusiasm to match Roland and Thad's. Their friends read books about gentrification and food justice, and spoke about the importance of community outreach and safe spaces. Yet they were all college students or unpaid interns funded with credit cards paid for by their parents. And none of them had even grown up in the city. Thad's roommate, Sophie, who had turquoise dreadlocks and cooked meals from ingredients scavenged from dumpsters, asked Daniel if he was familiar with socialist food models since he'd been born in China, and he told her he was born in Manhattan. Thad had said,
It's dope that you left school and rejected your parents' boners for academia. It's such a scam. College. Being a professor. All of that.
Uncomfortable at hearing someone else talk smack about his parents, Daniel asked,
How do you know they're professors?
Thad said,
Roland told me.
Roland had told Daniel that Thad funded Melancholia with the monthly allowance his parents gave him.
I hear your dad's a hedge fund manager,
Daniel said.
Yeah,
Thad said.
He fucking sucks.
Daniel envied people who could take their origins for granted. Who could decide to hate their parents. Another roommate knocked on the door, shouting that there had been an explosion in the kitchen. A food processor malfunction. They were making pesto for Sophie's cooking podcast, and this guy's hand was bleeding all over the place. Did Thad know where the first aid kit was? Thad stood, dusting off his jeans.
I'll be back. What do you think about the tracks?
Roland said to Daniel. Daniel bit into the callus and tore off a piece of dead skin.
Good, I guess.
He looked at the posters again. In high school, stoned at this party in Cody Campbell's barn, he had thought he was seeing bats. Freaked out until Cody had to tell him that those weren't bats he was seeing up there on the ledge, but shadows of gardening tools.
Chill.
Cody had said. It was funny. Ridiculous. The thought of barns and bats and Cody Campbell in this random basement in Queens.
Hey, remember Cody Campbell?
What, that fat douche?
He chewed on the piece of skin. I don't know if I can do this.
Of course you can. The past shows have been perfect. That first one was just a fluke.
I don't mean shows. But how could Roland understand? In Ridgeboro, Roland's last name and light brown skin had made him suspicious. But he was clearly Alicio, too. He and his mother had the same pointy faces and thin, dark hair. Playing shows in towns where people didn't know them, there'd been a few guys who had heckled Roland in fake sing-song Spanish. The same sort of guys who'd throw "Konnichiwa" at Daniel. And then there was the time a cop had pulled them over on the highway outside Ridgeboro. Ticketed them for speeding. Bogus charges, as the old mail truck Roland drove could barely hit the speed limit. The cop had given Roland a sobriety test, even though he and Daniel were sober. Daniel terrified in the passenger seat. Noting the fear in Roland's back as he stood on the highway with his hands behind his head. The cop saying something about drunk Mexicans. When they were free to go, Roland had driven straight to Ridgeboro. And it was one of the only times Daniel had seen his friend at a loss for words. When Roland finally did speak, he said, "We have to get the fuck out of here." And Roland had. And so had he. Still, Roland had never spoken any language other than English. Never had any other name but his own. Had known his whole life who his mother was and where she could be found. What had set him apart in Ridgeboro? The dead Latino father, the widowed white mom. Roland had used to his advantage. Looked as different as he could. Dressed like a freak. Invited people's stares. Ate it up.
Were you taking me and Thad seriously? I was talking out of my ass. Thad's always talking out of his ass. We don't have to bring in more vocals or anything you don't want. I'm not sure if this is the direction I want my music to be going in. I don't want it to be more layered. So what do you want?
A sharper tone slipped into Roland's voice.
This is a collaboration. It doesn't feel like it. This is the sound you want to make, to please Hutch. You write all the songs. You're more than welcome to write a song.
Daniel was so mad his leg was twitching.
All you care about is being cool. People liking you.
Roland looked stunned. Like the time they were walking through Washington Square Park and a pigeon had shat on his shoulder.
Like you don't care about that? Come on. I was trying to help you out. Help me? I could have found anyone to play in the band. Like there aren't any good guitarists in the city. But you needed a reason to leave upstate.
Daniel pushed an empty coffee cup with his foot.
I'm not your charity project. Everyone likes you but you,
Roland said.
You know how many times I've sung on stage? Every single time I get nervous. One time, I puked in the bathroom before soundcheck.
Roland's chin bobbed as he talked. A vestigial trait from childhood. And Daniel had a flash of lost affection for the young Ridgeboro Roland. He couldn't bail on his closest friend.
So we'll play with Yasmin on May 1. Think of it as a warm-up. And then the big show on May 15. The one Hutch will be at. 2 weeks to get it all ready.
Wait, Daniel said.
What day is it? Monday.
I mean, today's date. He looked at his phone. April 27. There was a missed call from an hour ago. From the person he'd been thinking of.
Hold on. I'll be back.
He wandered through a maze of hallways, past the kitchen, where he caught a glimpse of a countertop splattered with pesto and blood, Sophie and Thad bandaging a guy's hand, and found a door that opened onto a gravel lot. The night was cool, a slice of moon shining over the building's plastic siding,
He unlocked his phone and called the number labeled Mom and Dad.
He was glad it was Kay who answered and not Peter. Mom, he said. Happy birthday.
I called you earlier. I didn't leave a message.
I know, I saw it on my phone.
Your father doesn't know a thing about this. And I'm not about to tell him. But I spoke to the dean at Carlo, and she's willing to set up a meeting with you. You could still get in for the fall.
Wait.
She said to see her in 2 weeks, the Friday after next. May 15. You need to be up here by that afternoon.
I don't know. How's Dad? What are you doing for your birthday? Did you make a treasure hunt?
We're fine. We did the treasure hunt thing this morning. The first clue came in the mail. He put it in an envelope that looked like a bill. Then he had me walking down the street to find a clue in the Lawton's tulips. Now he's cooking me dinner.
Tell him I didn't mean it. With the essay.
He heard Peter's voice yell,
Honey?
And Kay said she had to go.
May 1. 2 weeks before the big show. Psychic Hearts played a few songs in an outdoor lot under the Brooklyn Queens Expressway, opening for Yasmin.
Daniel had invited Michael, and he came up afterwards and shouted,
That was amazing!
Roland, Nate, and Javier looked over. Daniel had never had a friend appear at a show before. He introduced Michael as his cousin, and Michael held his hand out to be shaken. Roland took it, while Nate and Javier nodded, then resumed talking.
Your band rocked,
Michael said.
Thanks for coming,
Daniel said. Michael looked at Roland.
How do you two know each other?
Roland raised his eyebrows.
We grew up together. Daniel's like my oldest friend.
We grew up together, too,
Michael said.
We lived together in the Bronx.
You lived in the Bronx?
For a few years, Daniel said.
And your mom's, your birth mom, they were sisters?
Something like that. Close enough.
Did you speak to her?
Michael asked.
I left her a message, but I haven't heard back yet.
Hold up,
Roland said.
You called your mom?
I got her phone number from Leon, Michael's uncle.
It could have been the wrong number, Michael said. It was an old number.
It was her voicemail. I recognized her voice.
Then fuck it,
Roland said. Michael's mouth hung open.
Excuse me?
Sorry. I know it's your birth mom and all, but if she doesn't want to talk to you, it's her loss. I told you, if you called, you'd regret it.
You told him not to call his own mother?
Roland brushed his hair back with his palm.
She's not his mother.
Daniel said,
She is my mother.
She didn't raise you. I mean, I never knew my dad. And whatever, you know?
I never knew my dad either,
Michael said.
But Dunning, I mean Daniel, he knew his mom really well.
Okay, do what you want then,
Roland said. Michael's face flushed.
Of course he will.
Daniel said,
Well, Kay's my mom too.
He wished he could be cool. He wanted to not care. But instead he was like Michael. Obvious. Transparent. He asked Michael if he wanted to join them at a bar nearby. And when Michael said no, he had an early class tomorrow, Daniel felt relieved.
It was good to finally see you in action, though,
Michael said.
Seriously, you guys rocked. You were like a harder Maroon 5.
As he walked away, he said,
Nice to meet you, Roland.
You too,
Roland said. As Michael turned the corner, Nate and Javier began to laugh.
Did he say Maroon 5?
Nate snorted.
Hey, Roland, does that make you Adam Levine?
Shut up, Nate, Daniel said. At Potsdam, he was never satisfied at parties. Always thought he should be somewhere cooler, more exciting.
With friends who were cooler and more exciting.
Now he was surrounded by people who were supposed to be cool. Yet that elusive sense of self-satisfaction and contentment. Love? Hadn't materialized.
He went home by himself after the show, leaving Roland at the bar with his friends. Ever since he'd proved he could play, Nate had done a 180 with him, never forgetting his name, listening when he spoke. But Daniel didn't want to hang with people who were pretending to be his friend only when it seemed socially advantageous, who iced out Michael like they'd done to him 2 months ago. He was Roland's charity project, and the guy in the background in Javi's photo. But Michael had always been loyal. Maybe his mother had been busy, or traveling in a place that didn't have cell phone access, or she'd lost her phone or broke it and was in the process of getting a new one. Maybe his Chinese was so bad she hadn't been able to recognize it was him, even if he'd said his name and repeated his phone number twice. Maybe his tones had soured from disuse, and the words he believed sounded passable to the fruit and vegetable vendors were actually babble, non-language, guttural ranting. Or she was pretending to not understand him. He needed to know. He dialed the country code and the numbers. There was a soft click and a ringing that sounded far away. Daniel paced Roland's living room and waited for her voicemail message to kick up. He heard another click.
"Hello?"
she said.
"Deming?"
"Hello?"
he said in Fujianese.
"Hello?"
"It's me, Deming."
"Hello, Deming. I'm glad you called again."
Hearing her voice made his breath catch.
"Hello, Mama."
"It's you. You sound like an adult."
Now that he was talking to her, he didn't know what to say. She said,
"Are you okay?"
"I'm good."
The accusations he'd been poised to let loose remained stuck at the back of his throat. He sat on the couch, on top of his dirty laundry. Here he was, making small talk with his estranged mother.
"I'm living in New York City. In Manhattan. Not that far from where we used to live."
"You're 21 now."
Why was she whispering?
"Are you working? In school?"
"Both. In university. I have a job in a restaurant. I also play the guitar with my friend. In a band."
"You always liked music."
"How are you, Mama?"
Each time he said the word, he got afraid. She'd change her mind. Hang up on him. He removed a sock wedged between the cushions and flung it across the room. He'd wanted to ask why she hadn't called him back, but didn't want to scare her away.
"I'm good. I live in Fuzhou, in an apartment by Westlake Park. I'm married. My husband has his own textile factory. I'm the assistant director of an English school."
"My life is perfect." That's what she was saying. Daniel switched to English.
"How did your English get so good?"
"I practiced," she said in English,
and her accent was so thick he wasn't convinced. She switched back to Fujianese.
"How did you get my phone number?"
"I spoke to Leon."
"Oh."
"He said he hadn't spoken to you in 7 years."
"Yes, it's been a long time. We were in touch before. But it's hard now. Work is busy, you know."
Daniel walked to the window, returned to the couch,
I found Leon because I saw Vivian. Through Michael. He found my email address. Which wasn't easy. Because I don't go by Thumbing anymore. I go by Daniel Wilkinson.
Daniel Wilkinson?
My parents gave me that name. There was a short silence.
So you saw Michael?
I had dinner with him and Vivian. He told me she had gone to court as my guardian and given me away to a foster family. A longer silence ensued. Hello?
He should end the call. This had been a mistake. That bitch,
his mother said. But her words were too measured and quiet, lacking the fire he remembered. How could she do that? He wished he could see her face, wanted to be able to place her in a room. Mama.
Yes.
What do you see right now?
I'm in my apartment, in our office room. I see curtains, a desk. We're on the 12th floor. If I look out my window, I see other buildings. Fuzhou is a big city these days, like New York. What do you see, Deming?
Some shelves. My computer. My clothes. My guitar. There's a window, but it faces another building.
She asked if he remembered riding the subway, and he mentioned the time they had met their doppelgangers. In Ridgeboro, when Deming Guo was no longer a name that was said aloud, he used to picture the other Deming and other Mama still living in Queens. It was a sort of comfort. Bittersweet. At least they'd remained together.
I have to go, she suddenly whispered. I'll call you tomorrow.
She called him the next day. Wednesday evening in New York. Thursday morning in Fuzhou. He was at work. Didn't see the message until later.
Hello, Deming, she said. I wanted to say hello, but you're probably at school. Don't call me. We need to set up a time to talk in advance. But I'll call you again tomorrow.
All next day he kept his ringer on high, but she didn't call. After work he called and left her another message, asking her when they could talk next. He went back to the apartment, ate takeout enchiladas from Tres Locos, and tried to work on a song, deciding against going out. He hadn't touched his own music in weeks. If he made himself unavailable, she would call, like bringing an umbrella for insurance against the rain. He took a long shower, changed into sweatpants, folded his clothes, did the dishes crusting away in the sink. Finally, he looked at his phone. She'd called. Left him a message suggesting 5:30 Friday morning, New York time. That night he slept well for the first time all week. The next morning, he was ready. He got up earlier than he ever did, bought a cup of coffee and a bagel at a deli on 6th Avenue, then sat at the kitchen table and dialed. At first it was the wrong number and the call didn't go through. Panicked, he double-checked. Dialed again. She picked up.
Deming?
Is this a good time?
Yes. My husband is out. I'm on our balcony right now.
He'd made a list of things he wanted to ask.
Remember the time you pushed me off a swing?
What made you think of that?
I just remembered it.
I never pushed you off a swing.
You fell off.
I remember when I asked the school to put you with another teacher. They wanted to move you to a remedial class.
That had been Kay, wanting to put him in a higher grade.
I don't remember that.
At PS63. I even remember the principal. Spanish lady with lots of hair.
You were having trouble. And I didn't want you to be in that class anymore. I got you transferred to Michael's class. He was in an advanced class, so it had kids from your grade in it, too.
It was PS33, not 63.
Daniel put his elbows on the table and saw the outline of the principal's face. A memory of walking to her office with his mother. How strange it had been to see her in the hallway of his school. How relieved he'd been to sit next to Michael in another classroom. He saw another scene. His mother yelling at a woman. In the memory, the other woman's son had made fun of his clothes or his lack of English, and he had cried. Yes, he saw it clearly now. Dumming, crying in the park, and Mama running to him. And when the other mother defended her own son, said he'd done nothing wrong, Mama had let her have it, spitting in Fujonese. Fighting for him. Being on his side.
Damn. He said in English. Tell me something else I should know.
When I came to New York, I was already pregnant with you. I had $50,000 in debt.
You were pregnant when you came here? Who was my father?
A boy in the village. My next-door neighbor.
He waited for her to say more. As she told him about how she came to New York, he finished the bagel, chewing quietly, and the rest of his coffee. Then he told her he had grown up in a town called Ridgeboro, that his adoptive parents were named Peter and Kay, and he was taking a break from school. The sun was coming up. Before she could end the call, he said,
"If you found Leon, why didn't you try to find me?"
"I did try."
She sounded hurt.
"I looked for years, even. Leon didn't know where you had gone. I was saving money to come back to New York. Even if it cost me $60,000, I was planning on coming to find you. Even if the first thing they did when I got there was throw my ass in jail. When I heard from Leon that you'd been adopted, I wanted to jump off a bridge."
Her words retreated into a small, strangled space. Daniel's mind was a jumble of names and motives. It was Leon's fault they'd been torn apart. Vivian who had given him away. He stood against the counter, brushed crumbs onto the floor.
"But you're okay?"
A hopeful note crept into her voice. Daniel walked back to the living room. To acknowledge his mother's regret meant he had to think of what her leaving had done to him. The nights he'd woken up in Ridgeboro in such grief it felt like his lungs were seizing. Months, years had passed like this, until he became adept at convincing himself it didn't matter.
"That doesn't excuse you going away," he said. "You have no idea what happened to me. You can't pretend you didn't mess up. That you did nothing wrong."
Roland came out of his bedroom.
"What's going on?"
"Nothing. Go back to sleep."
"Everything all right?"
"Yeah."
"Taming?"
his mother said.
"You still there?"
Daniel waited until Roland returned to his room and closed the door.
"Yes."
"There are so many things you don't understand," she said. "Ask Leon. You said you spoke to him. So why don't you ask him?"
He was silent. He heard his mother say,
"Yes, I'm in here."
She spoke in a loud, cheery manner. And he heard a man's voice in the background. She whispered,
"My husband is home. I have to get off the phone. I'll call you."
"Call ended," the screen said.
Daniel poured himself a glass of water and drank it in several gulps, then washed his face in the sink. As the cold water ran down his neck, he realized her husband didn't know about him. That she pretended he didn't exist.
10. Central Park was covered in a thick matting of leaves, and the smoky smell of October made me think of running through the temple courtyard with Fong and Li Ling.
You were running around the village like that now.
I flipped through an English-language newspaper a woman in an orange apron had given me in the subway. Couldn't read the articles, but I could make up stories. I didn't often feel self-conscious about being out by myself. But today I wanted you to be there with me. Needed someone to play witness to my life. 5 years had passed since I sent you to Iba, and the pain of missing you had faded. Become amorphous. It was like missing a person I no longer knew. After you left, Dee Dee returned to her bed. And when another roommate moved out, I was promoted to my own. The sleeping bag on the floor going to the next new woman that arrived. Now I had a top bunk. Most of the women I'd lived with when I first came had left for other apartments, even other cities. Dee Dee spent a couple nights a week at her boyfriend Guan's apartment, but she and I remained on Rutgers Street. Instructed the new arrivals on how to buy subway cards, where to get the best produce, which stores were rip-offs. I recognized the fear in these newcomers' faces. Watched them absorb my recommendations with grave intention. They said I was brave. They were awestruck when I told them how long I'd been in the city. You'll get used to it, I said. It gets easier. A few roommates had saved enough to buy into marriages of convenience. Dee Dee and I went to City Hall for our friend Cindy's wedding to a gray-haired white man.
I can introduce you to the woman I worked with, Cindy said. Professional Chinese lady.
I don't want to sleep with a hairy American, I said.
Then wanted to take it back. Because that's what Cindy had to do.
You can get a Chinese man who has citizenship. And you don't have to stay married, Cindy said. Only long enough for it to work. You don't even have to sleep with him if you don't want to. It's stupid to marry a guy without papers. It's a wasted opportunity. The way you're going, it's going to take a long, long time to get your green card. If ever, Dee Dee added.
Since you'd left, I'd been working 12-hour shifts. Sewed more hands than anyone else. On the wall next to my bunk, I taped a piece of paper with two columns, one with the amount I owed, the other with what I'd paid off. The numbers so small I could only see them when I was lying down. And slowly, the number in the first column decreased, and the number in the second column increased. But with the months I hadn't worked after you were born and the money I sent to Iba, it was taking longer than I expected. By the time you were 5, I had paid off a little more than half the debt. More than 20,000 remained. I called you once a week. At first, Iba would hold the phone to your face and ask you to say hello, and I would talk to you as you made gibberish sounds. Later, you were able to speak to me. And each time I called, your voice would sound fuller and you would know words you hadn't before.
Are you listening to your Yigong? I'd ask.
Yes.
What did you do today?
Fed the chicken.
Do you remember New York?
No.
You turned 4, then 5, old enough to go to school in New York. But Iba made excuses.
Why not wait until your debt is paid so you can have more time for him? He said. Wait until you have enough saved to get your own place. He shouldn't be living with all those women. And you need to get a better-paying job, with better hours. Who will look after him when you're at work?
But Iba had softened with his grandson. I'd told him that I'd met your father in New York.
Though your